With the holidays behind us by a few weeks, it's now time for our local theaters to get back to productions of dramas and comedies. Leading the pack is the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park with Bruce Norris's prize-winning play, Clyburn Park. In fact, this show qualifies as a three-peat, having landed London's Olivier Award for Best New Play, Broadway's Tony Award for Best Play, and the 2011 Pulitzer Prize for Drama. At the Playhouse, it's being directed by associate artist Timothy Douglas, and he's here this evening to share his thoughts regarding this satirical show that is set in the minefield of race. Welcome to Around Cincinnati, Timothy.
Thank you so much.
Let's start with a bit of context here. Norris's play, which sets its first act in Chicago in 1959 and its second a half century later in the same house, in fact, took its inspiration from another play, Lorraine Hansberry's Raisin in the Sun, which is the story of a dream deferred about a black family seeking to improve its station in life by purchasing a home in a previously white neighborhood. Could you talk a little bit about how Norris took that foundation and then created this play?
Specifically, he looks at one of the scenes late in Raisin in the Sun where the character Carl Lindner, who is white, representing the community of Clybourne Park. Depending on how you look at it, one, you can look at it as a man threatening this black family, attempting to move into this all-white neighborhood because of just mostly fear of the unknown. But as we investigate Clybourne Park, we've been able to look at it as a way of him warning them, not as a threat, but as history has already taught him that when black families move into white neighborhoods, people feel threatened based on fear and ignorance, and you know, maybe you don't want to do that. So depending on how you enter that play, you get inside the mind of Bruce Norris. So that character, Carl Lindner, leaves the younger family from Raisin in the Sun and goes back to his community, literally 2 hours later, and they said no. They're moving in, and the play kicks off from there.
So that is 1959, just a few hours later.
Yes.
And things don't go especially well in that conversation.
No.
And then that plays out, and we have an intermission. And then we come back, and 50 years have passed. And the situation, I guess you could sort of say it's reversed. The neighborhood has turned completely African-American. But now there are young professionals, whites and others, who are looking to move into the neighborhood and make changes that the now long-term residents are resistant to.
Yes.
So it makes for a very interesting comparison that both draws some of the differences and sort of a plus de la chance, plus de la même chose. It's much more of the same kind of thing. The actors in your play portray the characters in both acts.
Yes.
That's a very interesting concept. It's one that the playwright conceived of, I believe. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about working with those actors in playing those different roles.
They're very gifted and malleable. And with some of the characters, there is a theme where the character of Kathy in Act 2 is actually playing the daughter of characters in the first part. And Bruce has done that with each character. There is a line that he's drawing. The more that the two acts feel different from one another in the playing and the construction of them, how remarkably similar they are. And just to expand on your thumbnail of the plot, from a visual and very American point of view, we look at the people on stage and we say, ah, this is a play about relationships between blacks and whites. But really, it's a uniquely American thing about our inability to talk in any kind of fluid way about things that make us intensely uncomfortable. This play not only deals with perception of race between blacks and whites, but also women's issues, other gender issues, politics, class, and race. But I feel the race aspect is the most potent, and I think Bruce knows this as well, because at large in America, we, at least in my experience, we haven't found a fundamental way to enter the conversation in a way that's going to move forward before it breaks down in defensiveness, in just wanting to bury the head.
How do you go about exploring those kinds of things and the issues that they're dealing with, some of which, as you say, resonate from one act to the other, some of which are perhaps a little more contemporary?
Mm-hmm. You know, I can't say that I designed a way of working on it, but I deliberately spent a lot of time on Act 1, but we didn't even read Act 2 before we fundamentally understood our footing in Act 1. And then as we explore Act 2, I just treat it like two different plays. It's an evening of two one-acts, and it allowed us to enter the play with what is very different and unique, separate from the first part. But the more the actors get to know the characters and embody them, it is remarkable how similar both acts are in the parallel way with what progress we've made in America, specifically with race relations, and just how so much more there is to do. Both feel very familiar.
Did you use the Raisin in the Sun as any preparation for yourself or for the cast, just as sort of they understood the characters and the dynamic in that play?
Not formally. I've directed Raisin in the Sun 3 times now, and I've been in it. The actor playing Carl Lindner in Act One, I did insist that he go back and look at Raisin in the Sun, especially the scene that his namesake is in. But Bruce is not being very literal. It's just a jumping off point, and suggested that the whole cast read Raisin in the Sun. But you don't need to know Raisin in the Sun to appreciate Clybourne Park.
A lot of reviews of productions of this show, which have happened in New York and L.A. and Chicago, San Francisco, Washington, even London, stress the satire and its sharp humor. But it strikes me that it's a pretty serious story about human relations.
Yeah, that word satire, that's not the first thing I think when I approach this play. And I approach every play exactly the same way. I mean, they're human. We go for the essential truth. And then the play, depending on its levels of theatricality, demands more. And I suppose that more in other productions could be defined as satire. Now, that said, there is a lot in this play that is very funny. But it's that human sort of, I can't believe that they're saying that. Or I can't believe how much I'm seeing myself in this. And yet at the same time, it's so distant. And is it a laughter of discomfort? No matter what, it's definitely a release and a relief. And it is an enjoyable evening in the theater. And there are lots of laughs. But I am not yet at the place where I would call it a satire.
It strikes me as I was reading the script that it reminded me of Yasmin Ariza's God of Carnage a bit, at least in the very forced sort of argumentation between characters.
Yeah, for me, it's that entering with all good intentions and being seduced by perhaps an early sense of rapport with one another. And then this invisible line gets crossed where we are in shark-infested waters. We don't even see the shore to swim back to. In that way, the play's structures are very similar.
Right. Last season, you made your Playhouse debut with a production of The Trip to Bountiful, which is a lovely play about a woman yearning to return to her childhood home. You cast Romulus Linney's play with African-American actors, giving it, a new kind of resonance and perhaps some new meaning for audiences. Does the humanity in that play connect in any way with Clybourne Park? I mean, is there any resonances in your mind between the shows? I mean, the stories are very different, obviously.
Yes and no. Obviously, Mr. Linney was not thinking about African-American culture when he wrote The Trip to Bountiful, but of course the humanity within that play, to use a word which kind of cheapens things for me, I don't use it often, but it's universal. And so it honors the African-American experience without changing Linney's intention, where Bruce Norris is quite deliberate about sending us into the murky area of attempting, in good faith, to have difficult conversations, and again, specifically about race.
The show's second act, I think, in reading it at least, feels very in the moment in spite of the many resonances and parallels with the first act.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you expect that Clybourne Park is going to remain topical in years going into the future. Will it be a show that will be produced on and on, do you think?
This reminds me of I had the blessing of working with Ethel Fugard on Valley Song, the first play he wrote after apartheid was officially abolished in South Africa. And as a playwright, he really didn't know what to write. He made his commitment and perfect career on writing about the atrocities of apartheid. Similarly, if and when, and I live in faith, when we figure out a way to authentically coexist with our history of slavery in America, perhaps the play becomes an entertainment merely. But until that day, the play will continue to resonate. And not just about race, but the prickly nature of gentrification in major urban areas where there are sizable black populations. And again, once you listen to the play enough or you're able to hook into all the different levels, issues of gender again and politics, class, as long as those remain issues for America, the play will remain resonant.
There is an ironic conclusion to the show in which a character says, I think things are really beginning to change.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the second act and it feels like deja vu in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting play. The Cincinnati Playhouse's production of Clybourne Park has been in previews this weekend on the Marx Theater stage. Its official opening is Thursday and it will be on stage through February 16th. You can go to WVXU.org for more information about the theater and this production. My guest this evening has been Timothy Douglas, director of the Cincinnati Playhouse's production of Clybourne Park. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.